Get ready to expand your horizons and discover great reads. This is Bookbound, a library podcast. Welcome back. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm joined at the mic by Cheryl Lindemann and Mari Garza. Hey, ladies.
Hello.
And we are the majority of, Cattle's collection. This month, we're celebrating summer reading and listening with a range of titles. We've got, you know, from whimsical to titles more introspective. But I think we just want to jump right in.
Yeah, let's jump right in.
All right.
Well, I'm going to start with two books. One is a picture book, and the other one is a juvenile fiction book. And they both are exciting to me in that they're both about, or one is actually technically written by, posthumously, Rachel Carson, the great environmentalist and author, marine biologist, who worked for the U.S. Fisheries and Wildlife during her lifetime, and of course wrote the most famous book, Silent Spring, but also wrote some other wonderful, informative and lyrical science and nature books. So the exciting thing for me about this book is not just that they're about Rachel Carson, but they're illustrated by two of my favorite illustrators. The first is the picture book, Something About the Sky, Rachel Carson, technically written by her, and then illustrated by Nikki McClure. And if any of our listeners are familiar with Nikki McClure, she's a Washington State-based paper cut artist, and she's illustrated an amazing array of picture books in our collection, and a few other, she does these posters and kind of famous calendars. She's an activist, an artist, and so we have a couple of her nonfiction poster-type collections in the system, too. But this one was a broadcast from the 1950s, and it was a TV channel that hired Rachel Carson to do the script for like a little nature documentary. And it was about clouds and the water cycle. And so Nikki McClure was contacted by Orion Magazine to make this work, and they had to actually dig into the archives to find the script and go to the Yale Library to find the actual text of the script. And this is the illustrated script of this program, and it's about the water cycle, it's about different types of clouds, but like all of Rachel Carson's work, it's really about wonder, and just that wonder, and brings that feeling to children about looking up at the sky, and that cycle that just continually happens over and over again. The other book is the juvenile fiction book. It's called Force of Nature, a novel of Rachel Carson by Anne E. Berg, with art by Sophie Blackall.
Of course.
And Sophie Blackall, I couldn't believe it when I saw the cover. You know, I've talked about her a lot on the podcast. And she's written so many Caldecott Medal books. I think I just talked about one a couple of months ago. But this is a fictionalized memoir. And it's in verse, which is really, really lovely.
I was just going to say, is this in verse? Because I know Anne Berg does a lot of that.
Yeah, it's in verse, and it's so beautifully written. And it gets you into the life of Rachel Carson from childhood. She was born about 1905, 1908, somewhere around there. And so it touches on the First World War, where her brother went to go fight. And her family had a lot of hardship. I mean, the war, but her father had a lot of frustrations financially. There were huge health problems in their family. She lost many family members. Her life was not easy at all. And it takes her through this sort of takes you through her life, and it's fictionalized, but it's based on a lot of fact, and her deep abiding love of nature and how that sort of pulls her through her life and brings her to this career where she was told she couldn't do it, that there weren't women who did this type of marine biology, but she did it anyway, and it brings you all the way through to Silent Spring and the publishing of that and her other books. And just a really quick piece from the book. She says, when will man realize that he is part of nature, not its master? I think that's so powerful, and that really underscores a lot of her work. And, you know, Silent Spring, what it did for our environment, for our health, is monumental. She actually did die of cancer, and it touches on that, too. A piece of this that was really upsetting to me is that she was not treated well by doctors. She was sort of not respected by her male physicians, and her cancer diagnosis and treatment probably could have gone differently had it been today. And so that was sort of a painful part of the story. She did pass away from cancer. But you really, really, if you're interested in her, this is a children's book, but it'd be great for any age, and it gives you some really good insight into her life.
Very cool.
Very cool. Well, I have a picture book that I want to talk about. It's The Truth About the Couch by Adam Rubin. And this would be Adam Rubin of Dragon's Love Tacos fame. And it's illustrated by Liniers, Argentinian comic artist, also very, very well known. And this was a really funny book. I really needed to read it. And I'm glad I read it a couple different times, three different times actually, because I got more and more out of it. So let's pretend there's a little fox and he's like, psst, I want to tell you what the furniture police don't want you to know. So then he begins to show you these poster boards. And he's telling us about different types of couches. You know, there's the sectional, there's the futon, there's the day bed. You know, you get the picture. We think, you know, couches are for sitting on, but Mr. Fox, we'll call him Mr. Fox because that's kind of what he looks like as a fox. You know, nope, they're for taking naps, playing video games, you know, family photos, psychological analysis, dance parties, pillow sliding. That one was a new one to me. And then out of nowhere, when he presents us with that piece of information, there's this like rodent, or I'm going to say a raccoon. We'll call him Mr. Raccoon. Who just, like, begins challenging Mr. Fox. Like, you can't tell children that. You know, people could hurt themselves. Pillow sliding. This is just a hilarious book. And I really like, you know, there's a lot of banter that goes on. You know, Mr. Fox, you know, tries to convince us that couches grow like little couch seeds in the farmlands. And little, you know, that's how we, you know, couch potatoes. That's how you get that. They eat a lot, like phones and coins and remote controls, you know, even cats
they
sometimes.
They definitely eat remote controls.
That sort of thing.
Oh, my God.
I think what I appreciated the most about this very silly book is that there was a lot of back and forth. Like, each Mr. Fox and Mr. Raccoon really had very strong opinions, and they were really debating with each other. I really, really liked that aspect because it kind of gave you a good picture for, like, defending your point of view. I really, really liked that. I would say read this one really slowly and, you know, really even take a couple, maybe even three nights to read over it a few different times because there's a dinosaur, and I'll just leave it at that.
It's mysterious.
Yeah.
And here we have the whimsy portion of the...
I didn't catch that right away. So, okay. That's it.
Sounds great.
Okay. Well, my first book is actually one... Cheryl or I could have done this. We both were interested in this well ahead of time. I just happened to finish it first. So my first book is There's Always This Year on Basketball and Ascension by Hanif Abdurraqib. He's wonderful. He is a pop culture commentator. He's a sports person. He is a poet in his writing. I mean, it's just this book I listened to. I felt like a truly original, beautiful, poignant sports book that isn't about sports, if that makes any sense. It's just a really fascinating blend of creative writing, poetry. Grounded in basketball, it's laid out like a game. It's done in periods with timeouts and intermissions and interludes. It's also a book that's just not about basketball. It's looking instead at the people and places that make us, the joys and the pains, the misses and the baskets, who our role models are, who our fallen heroes are. And it's just a very intimate look. So you get probably more of his background than he's ever than he's shared in a lot of areas. Growing up in Cleveland neighborhoods in the same kind of time period as LeBron James. So it's just and I listened to this as an audiobook, and it is like, it's spoken word poetry. It's just, he delivers it so beautifully. It's so well written. And I don't want to go on about it too long, but it's a wonderful listen. I really think people should give it a try. And he's just one of those voices for our generation that I think,
yeah,
again, people just need to try.
I absolutely love anything that he writes. Little Devil in America was National Book Award winner last year, and I talked about that one on the podcast. I think it was last year. The years are blending together. A few years ago. Whoops. Yes, a couple years ago now. Anything he writes, I mean, he'll be telling you about something. You're talking about Whitney Houston. You know, he's got that pop culture, cultural critic piece, and he's talking about it, and all of a sudden he'll just turn a sentence and just blow you over. I mean, just the emotional poignancy of his writing, it's just beautiful.
And I can't remember the name of it, but he's got one of the articles in the Jack White. White Stripes
Lyrics. White Stripes book, right.
Book that's a Michigan Notable this year.
Yes.
There's about four essays at the front of that book, and his is one of them.
Yeah. His essays are just, they're just so powerful. He's so gifted. His Instagram page is also excellent, and his piece about after Sinead O'Connor's death was just so powerful and so important and so truly beautiful, beautiful writer. I haven't read it yet. You know, I got it right when it came out, and it's just sitting there, and so I just can't wait. So, yeah.
And it took me a little while, but in the end, I wanted to listen to it. Once I heard part of the audio, I wanted to finish it in audio. So,
yeah.
Just a really, really good book.
Yeah.
Okay. So just to pause, our own interludes, it's audiobook month. We're recording this pod during audiobook month. It's perfectly timed to coincide with when we're getting out into the world and maybe doing a road trip, maybe working in the yard with our headphones on, just wandering around doing our walks. And you have I'll go out and maybe take an earbud because I still want to hear the birds, but you know, I still also want to hear maybe Hanif, or maybe somebody else talking at me as well. So whether you're old school and you actually check out our books on CD, which we know there are people who do, or you use Hoopla, or you use Libby, or you find your audio outside of the library audiobooks, which is fine. It's just a wonderful way to read, and we, as librarians, stick with me, ladies, they count. It counts as reading.
Absolutely.
It is absolutely, absolutely a form of reading. So, and actually I'm the primary audiobook selector, at least for adult materials, and I'm always interested in what people are listening to. So a couple of weeks ago we asked our Facebook family, what audiobook or audiobook format would you recommend to a friend? We got a lot of answers. It was quite, I was really interested to see what people had put. We had a lot of notes about nonfiction and memoir, sort of people in my boat, and it's just a good way for them to do that. Solid contingent of full cast recordings. That's not for everybody, but I totally know a good number of people who like the big things with the sound effects
Lots
and the music and all the people. Things like Graphic Audio or Big Finish do. Are popular publishers that do those. Or somebody mentioned Northwoods by Daniel Mason, which is something it's like an epic story, so kind of there's a voice for each kind of time period. But there was one that I thought I wanted to share that was really cute. We had a note of multi-generational enjoyment, where a mother shared, "My kids and I just finished listening to The Phantom Tollbooth by Norton Juster, narrated by Norman Dietz, just a couple of days ago. Would highly recommend. It's been one of my favorite books since childhood, and the narrator did an awesome job. Really got us all immersed in the story and made sure to do unique voices for each of the characters. We have an older car, so we listened to a little bit of the story each day on our way to school, and we did it in an old-fashioned way with CD version that we rented from our local cattle library."
Yay.
So that was just a fun...
A dying breed, but let them live.
We still have them.
We still have them, and we're going to have them for a while. And, you know, I've noted before, at least post-pandemic, I look back, I used to do fiction, but I rarely read fiction. It's got to be something probably light or that I know what's going on for me to do fiction at this point, but I do a lot of nonfiction, and I'm actually currently in the middle of one that Cheryl talks about quite often, and I think it's on our minds quite often. It's Braiding Sweetgrass, so by Robin Wall Kimmerer.
My favorite book.
Yep, exactly. So,
I actually started listening to on a vacation. I was just on "We Loved It All" by Lydia Millett. Okay. That's a release that came out this year. A combination. She's a fiction writer usually, but it's a combination, memoir, environmental writing, and it's really fantastic essays, really uniquely laid out, sort of rolls out in this really unique storytelling type way.
Cool. Yeah, I was listening to a book by an Australian author who also reads it, so it was really, really great to hear his voice. Saints and Bullies, and the author is escaping me, but he does a really, like a sweeping history of the church all over the world and, you know, the influence of the Church of Jesus. And it's really, it was a massive book, I'll say. It took me a very long time to finish reading it, but his voice was very soothing. And I'm not sure I would have gotten through it if I had read it.
Yeah, and that's so sort of how I feel with with different ones. And sometimes I'll speed to the, I mean, I'll dive for the book so I can get read it quicker.
Yeah.
It just depends.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So I've got the next book, and I have a kind of lower middle grade book, Painting the Game. This is by the late Patricia McLaughlin. I believe this was her last middle grade book that she finished before she passed in 2022. And this is a beautiful book about baseball. You were talking about basketball.
Basketball, yep.
This is around the topic of baseball, but it's about an 11-year-old girl who is secretly learning how to become a pitcher. And I got the feeling that the book was kind of set in a rural area, but you do learn that it's really not too far away from Boston, Massachusetts. And I really love, you know, setting of the place in a book because it in some ways for me as I'm reading through it, it just becomes like its own character and just the description and the roads and that. But I'm like picturing this book being set in Dansville or something like that. Lucy plays on a school team that's called the Yard Goats. And one of the reasons they're named the goats is because there are actually three goats that are on one side of the fence, and they kind of like watch the team while they're playing. And when they when they hit their, you know, make their great awesome plays, the goats are bleating away, like cheering them on. Woohoo! Yeah, it's just an adorable thing that happens periodically throughout the book, but. I really like this book because it's about a girl who faces her, I don't know if fear is the right word, but it really requires courage to take on something where you know that pitching, it's a fast sort of a throw. And I'm not quite sure really at the kid level how dangerous it could possibly be, but certainly when I watch pitching in professional baseball, that looks like some serious work. But the family dynamics in the book are really just phenomenal. I mean, they've got a mom who's an artist, a dad who's a semi-pro baseball player, and they're just constantly talking. And, you know, they have a member, you know, a friend of the father who is also on the semi-pro baseball team. And they have these just excellent conversations. You know, they share meals together. They talk about life in ways that are just like, it was just kind of magical for me. One of the things I really learned is that the knuckleball is a rare and kind of a slow pitch that requires a certain type of grip. There's just so many tidbits about baseball that I hadn't known before. And I grew up, you know, going to Detroit Tiger Stadium and feeling like I knew a lot about baseball, but this was just a really neat book featuring, you know, just some of those special relationships like between the pitcher and the catcher. I would share this really with maybe a fourth grader. It's a very gentle read, just something I really loved.
It's wonderful.
And, Patricia McLaughlin is
amazing.
I mean, if you haven't, if listeners haven't read her, please pick her up. Even if you're an adult, you know, pick her up because she infuses everything that she writes with so much love, and it's magical is my word of the month. Anita Durkee, magical, but Patricia McLaughlin's work is magical.
Is Sarah Plainenthal her most famous book?
Yes, that was the Newbery winner. Okay. So,
and the way she turns the story, it's just, she's a master.
And in a way that is really appealing, I think, to young readers, at least when I
it kinda rolls.
Look at them. Like, this is just really very catchy for, you know, someone who's not, you know, in eighth grade yet, but really, and that younger reading level, this is, I really.
And they're slim, and I think that's nice, too.
Yeah.
They're not really thick.
Yes. This is a slim book.
Yeah, so for even a slightly reluctant reader, it rolls, and it's slim, so.
Okay. Good to know. All right, my next book is one I'd been meaning to read for quite a while, because I was just so curious. It's Solitaire by Alice Oseman, and if you're not familiar with Alice, Alice is the author of the graphic novel, actually webcomic first, then graphic novel series, Heartstopper, which is also now a Netflix series, streaming series. I was curious about this because this was their first book, which was written when she was 19. Published when she was 19, and it's the story of Tori Spring. And Tori, if you're familiar with the Heartstopper universe, Tori is Charlie's older sister, very, very protective, loving older sister. And you don't always get all the story in the webcomic. You get a lot of great insights into Tori in the webcomic, but not really inside her head. And Solitaire is actually the genesis of that universe. Tori was the first character that also has been created, and this is it's an angsty teen novel. It's the world is changing around Tori. Tori doesn't care about anything. There's a very strong nod to Catcher in the Rye in this book. And it's just the changing lives of teenagers. Tori's best friend is boy crazy. Tori is not. She doesn't want to go out. She doesn't do anything. She doesn't care about anything except her brothers. But something happens in this New Year's school. An old best friend, guy that she was best friends with when she was a kid, has started at her school. Another guy who's just kind of odd and interesting has started at her school. This is at an age level where, this is British schooling, this is an age level where you go from in sixth form in this particular setting. Up till this point, the schools have been boys' school, girls' school, and at a certain point, they can mix at a certain age. And these two guys have joined Tori's school. But also, this blog is being started, and it's basically posting things undermining the school administration, and these pranks start related with it, and the pranks get increasingly dangerous, and it seems really familiar to Tori in some way. So she starts trying to figure out what's going on. So you've got somebody who really doesn't want to be involved in anything, trying to figure out the answer to these, somewhat encouraged by one of the guys, somewhat discouraged by another one of the guys. But it's very interesting, and it's really particularly interesting because it very much deals with her mental health and is very asexual coded as well. But Osman, there's a really good note at the set of, or actually an interview at the back, where Osman is sort of noting that she didn't have the vocabulary to understand that, but it's, you know, if you look at it, if you read it, that would be your first impressions. And it's just a very interesting, if you're wondering kind of about the genesis of Heartstopper, if you're interested in Tori Spring, I would definitely go back and check this. It's a very interesting book, and it's so interesting to see. I mean, it started the whole Heartstopper universe. And Nick and Charlie, if you're familiar with that series, were fully formed in a solid couple in Solitaire. So she just found herself really wanting to know how they got there. Especially given that she does express that Charlie has had mental health issues and continues to have mental health issues. Which, if you're not caught up on the series, Netflix series, that's basically the focus of the next season. So it's just one to check out if you haven't already.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, I'm going to go in a different direction on the next one.
Of course.
We like to do that here.
Around.
We are over the place. This next one is called Corn Dance, Inspired First American Cuisine by Loretta Barrett Odin with Beth Dooley. And this is an absolutely beautiful book. My colleagues can see this here on the cover. Has the three sisters, corn, beans, and squash right on the cover. So this book is a really important book in cookbooks. It's coming out this year. I think it's going to be on a lot of end-of-year lists, especially for Paley James Beard Awards, that sort of thing, because Loretta Barrett Odin is sort of a national treasure, and she is a indigenous food activist. She is a member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation, and she has a PBS show about indigenous food. She's brought indigenous food to sort of tries to elevate it in our culture and amplify the voices of other indigenous chefs. And she has her own restaurant. And so this book really goes through, sort of starts with her, a little bit of story of her childhood growing up with, you know, aunties and grandmothers that took her foraging, mm-hmm. and the foods that she remembers. And then her life as an adult going out into the world and realizing, okay, there's French cuisine, we've got Chinese cuisine, okay, where's the indigenous cuisine? Where is it? And this is her mission then, and it becomes sort of a shift in her life, is to start this restaurant with her son and bring indigenous cuisine out into the open and then dedicate the rest of her life. She's a founding member of the National American Food Sovereignty Alliance. And Robin Wall Kimmerer, who we talked mm-hmm. about earlier today, has a blurb on the book, and she also kind of just says that Loretta Barrett Odin is a storyteller, and a storyteller with food. Mm-hmm. So just a beautiful book, Corn Dance.
All right.
All right, so this is Maddie, and as we are recording this podcast, it is the first week of summer reading, and I want to urge everyone to sign up, earn your points by reading, completing activities, and writing reviews if you so choose. We're all about summer adventures at Capital Area District Libraries, and I hope this is a fabulous time of reading for you. On my list this summer are books about hiking. I'd like to learn a little bit more about Catalonia in España, and also exploring the question of, do vegetables exist or not? How about you guys? What are things that you want to for the pod?
Yeah. It's very deep, Maddie. There's actually
articles written about that very question.
Of course there are. Yes.
I like it.
Well, I think of this next little round of titles. We've got adventure in this one. I'm jumping around for me. I'm going in so many different directions. I don't even know what to tell you. I'm pushing on with Robin Wall Kimmerer because I love listening to her, and that's going to be a little while. I'm not, you know, it's a long listen. I could read it quicker, but I just love listening to it. But I have so many books to read. I just want to take some time and sit back and read.
Yeah, absolutely.
This summer.
I actually had a little challenge, and I'll talk about the book a little bit later, to actually read a romance book. I am solidly a nonfiction reader, and so I do read some fiction, but it's usually not romance, and so I'll talk about that a bit later, but that was one of my summer challenges, and I already completed it.
All right. That's good.
Well, okay, we'll just start this little go-around. In terms of adventure, that's one of the summer reading themes, or the big summer reading theme. I decided I went comfort. I picked up Winter Lost by Patricia Briggs. It comes out this month. I got it a little early. And it's if you are not familiar with Patricia Briggs, she has a long-running series featuring Mercy Hopman, who is a coyote shape-changing woman. So she can be a coyote or she can be a woman. Over the course of a series, she has gotten involved with a band of werewolves. Because she's actually raised by werewolves, what do you do with, you have a shape-changing coyote woman, and you don't actually live around other kind of creatures like that. You, of course, take her to a werewolf compound and help. They'll help her because that's the way life works in some universes.
What else do you do?
I mean, but no, it's. I like Patricia Briggs. It's. One might say it's a guilty pleasure. She plays in everybody's mythologies and makes them all play together, mostly nicely, sometimes not nicely. We have this series in horror. It's a blend of fantasy. There's a little bit of romance in that we have Mercy and Adam, who are a couple that run through all of these books. The book I read was Winter Lost. It might be like the 14th book or something like that. It is not the place to start. The place to start would be Moon Called, which came out many years ago, and it's just the characters keep you coming back. I always think, how much farther can I keep going with this series? But it's one of those things, Briggs' ability to spin a web of connections and explore a wide range of mythologies and histories. It's just always been the draw, and she just has fun with it. And so, you know, we have kind of, we've got a British theme in our background lives right now, and there's a British mythology that's pulled in, there's a Nordic mythology that's pulled in, there's Coyote. She's a Coyote woman because technically Coyote is her father. And so Coyote wanders through every once in a while, and it's just all of these characters are fascinating, and the way that she makes all of these different belief systems and origin stories and mythologies play together is fascinating.
Wow.
And there's always an adventure, and there's always danger, and there's always action. And
sounds like a summer read.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yeah. Exactly. That's my point. That's what I was getting at.
Yeah. It's a little bit of everything. Well, in 1987, I read some romance books, Message from Mom and Palomino by Danielle Steele. And I have to say, I was 12 years old, and I loved them. And then fast forward, I read some Katie Ford or some Brit Lit, Chick Lit, and I really liked those. And I think those are romance, too, although Jessica has taught me a lot about romance. So I understand now that it has a happy ending.
Yes.
And that was something I literally didn't know.
Yeah.
So I tried to pick up romances, and I was like, this one doesn't have enough about baking. You know, I thought it would be a baking thing. Well, Jessica's like, it's a romance. I know. But I didn't want the romance. I wanted the baking. So it was really, really hard for me. So I finally found a book that has horses, England, Victorian England, and colonialism in the story. So that's my kind, because I always read about colonialism, right? So it's like, there we go, in a romance. So it's called The Siren of Sussex by Mimi Matthews, and it's part of a sort of a loose series called The Belles of London, I believe.
Yes,
I may have
that
a little bit incorrect. But each book focuses on a woman in Victorian England. This first one, The Siren of Sussex, is set during the time when Albert has just died and the country is still in mourning. So it's filled with a delightful amount of seances and sort of spiritualism and mysticism. They're trying to like channel, find Prince Albert, or that sort of thing was really popular. So this book takes place in London. It's in Bloomsbury and Russell Square. Our main character, Evelyn Maltravers, goes and stays with her uncle, and she has a mission. She really has to sort of get married and marry well, because her older sister, it's a little Jane Austen-ish in this part, her older sister has sort of soiled the family name with her actions running off with a man. And so she has to now, it's on the second youngest, to marry well and make the family name good again. She's considered a blue stocking. She's getting a little bit older. She's a little feminist, whether she doesn't really consider herself that, but she really is. And so her big thing, though, is riding. So she has her beautiful horse, and she's going to go to Rotten Row in Hyde Park and ride in this beautiful riding habit on this gorgeous Andalusian stallion of hers. So she goes to Ahmed Malik and says, I need this beautiful riding habit. I need to sort of get married. I need to find somebody. This is how I'm going to do it. Because she's not as good with like the ballroom dances. This is more her thing. But of course, they fall in love. And it's impossible for them to get together because he is half Indian. We learn his very difficult story of, you know, living in a brothel when he came to India, all of his really challenging life experiences, and how are they possibly going to get together. There's a lot of really rich detail, English detail, It just was really, really fun and substantial. And I have to say, I saw Rotten Row in Hyde Park and squealed because I thought, that's where the book took place. That's where they rode. And they would ride. She'd wear this beautiful habit. And it was like showing off. You know, they'd ride through this area and like parade around. And there were courtesans that did that. So it's a very rich story, just wonderful and really very fun. So
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Well, again, we're going to switch a little bit.
We always do.
I'm not even sure that this would really qualify as an adventure, but maybe.
I mean, in the thriller-type sense of a summer
read, yes.
It works.
This next book that I'm recommending is Have You Seen This Girl by Nita Tindall. And this is a story about Sid, a non-binary teen living in rural North Carolina. They are kind of tormented, really, by their father's serial killer status. And while I'd like to say this is sort of a Nancy Drew-ish sort of story, Sid is like Nancy Drew, but on a way higher level. There is a serious impact of having a father in prison for being a serial killer. You are really creeped out by this. I was, anyway, by this story, because even though it is a thriller, it's very quick-paced, you are constantly being reminded of the girls' names that were murdered. And then, to top it off, there's now, like, a copycat murderer. And Sid is trying their best to, like, figure out, why is this happening again? And who is it that's doing it?
Right.
And the names, you know, this is what I found really creepy in the book. Sarah Bonnick, Lila so-and-so, Don Schaefer, Samantha Markham, Lauren. I mean, the names are just repeated throughout the book.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I really liked about Sid is just this real determination to both clear their name, because Sid is convinced that they are somehow involved with the murders that are going on now, but also the history that they have because of the connection to their father. And they are also learning more about who they are and, you know, working hard to be accepted. And unfortunately, sometimes some of the things that happen in the story just is a little breaking in that, you know, they make accommodations for people to make them feel more comfortable with Sid's non-binary status. And it was just a little jarring, I think, you know, thinking about that. But the place in this story, North Carolina, there's lots of woods. There's lots of bike riding. There's lakes. There's sheds where the acts happen. I think that, you know, if you like a fast-paced story like, you know, Courtney Summers or even Holly Jackson, those types of authors, you'll really like this story.
Wow. All right.
That's a bunch of stories. That's a bunch of interesting adventures. And I think that's what we got for you today. Happy reading journey.
Yeah. Happy reading.
Happy summer reading.